This is a public service announcement sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho. H to the OV. I used to move snowflakes by the OZ. I guess even back then you can call me CEO of the ROC. Ho, fresh out the frying pan into the fire. I be the music biz number one supplier. Flyer than a piece of paper bearing my name. Got the hottest chick in the game wearing my chain. That's right, ho. Not DOC, but similar to them letters. No one could do it better. I check cheddar like a food inspector. My homie Strick told me, dude, finish your breakfast. So that's what I'ma do, take you back to the dude with the Lexus. Fast forward the jewels and the necklace. Let me tell you dudes what I do to protect this. Shoot at you actors like movie directors. Say the movie, dog.
Now, before I finish, let me just say, I did not come here to show out. Did not come here to impress you. Because to tell you the truth, when I leave here, I'm gone. And I don't care what you think about me. But just remember, when it hits the fan, brother, whether it's next year, 10 years, 20 years from now, you'll never be able to say that these brothers lied to you, Jack.
Thing ain't lie. I done came through the block and everything that's fly. I'm like Che Guevara with bling on. I'm complex. I never claim to have wings on, nigga, I get my by any means on. Whenever there's a drought, get your umbrellas out, because that's when I brainstorm. You can blame Sean, but I ain't inventing the game. I just rolled the dice trying to get some change. And I do it twice, ain't no sense to me lying as if I am a different man. And I could blame my environment, but ain't no reason why I be buying expensive chains. Hope you don't think users are the only abusers. Niggas getting high within the game. If you do, then how would you explain? I'm 10 years removed, still a vibe is in my veins. I got a hustler spirit, nigga, period. Check out my hat, yo, peep the way I wear it. Check out my swag, yo, I walk like a ball player. No matter where you go, you are what you are, player. And you can try to change, but that's just the top layer. Man, you was who you was before you got here. Only God can judge me, so I'm gone. Either love me or leave me alone.
Yo, that was Jay-Z's public service announcement. This is your boy, Reckless in the Building, coming at you with another episode of the Reckless Effect Podcast. How y'all doing out there? How y'all feeling? It's a beautiful day or night or whatever, wherever you are, whatever's going on in your hood, in your city, in your town, in your state, whatever, in your country. Man, I had to play that just because feels like niggas don't know who Jay-Z is. Goddamn, raps first. Hip hop billionaire. Whew. I wish I had a round of applause. I need to get my shit together. But anyway, so shouts out to them. But I want to give a quick shout out to all the listenership, everybody that's tuning in for the first time, everybody who's been following the podcast on Spotify. Thank you so much for all the love and support. I really appreciate it. You guys are amazing. So this week has been fucking weird and wild. Started a new job. Not going to get into that too much, but the job is dope. So I'm having a lot of fun. Shout out to everybody over there at work. And I'm having like just a transformic week. I'll say that. It's been very, very wild. Just watching things that are going on in the news, seeing what my friends are doing, and yeah, just all this beautiful shit, all the growth that I'm seeing from people that I know that I love. Shout out to Underground Flow, Mike Steven, shout out to Kenja's, shout out to Chapka's dance family, the Williams brothers. I see y'all. I miss you guys. You have no idea. I've been also like I had a very, very good conversation with my brother. Shout out to DZ. We haven't like talked in a while. No bad blood or anything. I don't want anybody to think that. It's just, you know, we live completely different lives and we don't take the time to check in with each other and talk, and we really need to do that more. Shout out to just everybody. Just all of you. All of you. This has been so much fun and so amazing. I just really appreciate everything and all the love, all the just everything. Shout out to Gary from Convicted Conversations. I hope you guys check out his podcast on Spotify, on Anchor. The man's doing big shit and he's doing some beautiful things. Yeah, so Just want to get all those out the way. Shout out to also two last people, Erica. Just thank you. You've been amazing. Yeah, tell Charlie I said hi. Hi, Charlie. Because I'm pretty sure she's in the car while listening to this too. And shout out to Nicole. You had a crazy fucking weekend, but I'm glad that you're like finding yourself and doing some amazing shit. Like, that's beautiful, man. It's beautiful. So yeah, let's get into some shit. Well, again, since I started off with Jay-Z, might as well just continue on into it. According to Forbes, Jay-Z has amassed a fortune that amounts to $1 billion. So we already know everything about that man and what he's been trying to accomplish, not only in rap, but in business as well. I mean, he started off in Marcy Projects in Brooklyn, started Rockefeller, released his debut album in 1996, and then he launched Rockaware in 1999, and he sold it in 2007 for $204 million. He's co-owning Ducé with Bacardi, acquired a title. He also has Ace of Spades that he owns. His music catalog is worth like $70 million. I mean, the man has just been like nonstop grinding. And man, couldn't be more ecstatic and happy about everything that he's been doing. Because it is truly, it's truly bigger than hip-hop. It really is. When he was, when he dropped 444 and he was talking about, you know, family and trying to create wealth for not just himself, but his children's children. That was a true and beautiful thing. And it showed the mindset of a man who is a man, who's trying to do better for himself and his community. We need to see more of that shit in hip-hop. What is crazy to me is that people aren't really looking at him and seeing the blueprint. They're just seeing, oh, he got money. But they're not only not asking how he's getting that money, but they're not also asking, like, how can I do that for myself? I see a lot of rappers still buying, like, expensive chains and all this shit, and they're not creating, like, more wealth for themselves. They're spending all this money that might appreciate, like, chains and shit, but that shit, it doesn't fucking matter anymore. Like, if I had $1 million, I'm investing the majority of it into different ventures so then I can continue to grow my money. I don't want to just spend it on shit and it's just sitting there. You see my money, because then that shit will just get stolen or robbed. Whatever. I just don't see the move. And I see way too many rappers from like the 90s who are broke, still touring, trying to make money, you know, and not doing it for the love of it. It's sad. Like Tyler Kwali and High Tech had a joint on Revolutions Per Minute that lightly spoke on it when it came to making money or losing money. Actually, I think I will just play that song because I do love the shit out of it, and it was a beacon for me because when I first heard it, it made me think of what it really is all about and how it comes down to it. So it's called In the Red, so I'll just play that joint, but listen out into the second verse when he's talking about James Brown and Michael Jackson.
Can you feel it? Can you feel it? There we go. Are you recording? Hey yo, Tone, is it on. Let it bump, they love it in the red. Reflection eternal, that other shit is dead. Yes, let me know if you alive. Put your hands in the air, let me know if bring it out. Hey, come on. Hey, I love music. Music is the river we float and we get delivered like the souls of those swept away crossing the Mississippi. Honorary spokesman, my focus is so scary. Vocalist for the hopeless, I'm champion of my city. Cracks in the levee, we're catching the last ferry. Apply this application, it's crashing your Blackberry. Rock steady like Aretha's got heavy. What's that about? Cat and mouse, Tom and Jerry, commissary, get commissioned to prison or sanctuary for the locked up. Every relationship adversary, ain't no replacement, so make a statement before you're buried. We very legendary, you're ready, no need to worry. Pay attention to the music, legend has it to bury. Mixed with transistor radio speakers, Marvin married his daughter and sort of a quest for a father figure, added E to the end of his name. You got the picture. Little Stevie Wonder was killing them at the shows. Best songwriters, Smokey and Quincy Jones. Gil Scott and last poets turn their poems into song. Everybody know that my favorite Nina Simone. Rest in peace, Michael Jackson. I think I need a Shimon. Paid attention to his lyrics. He wish we leave him alone.
Leave me alone.
Leave him alone. Leave him alone. James Brown and Michael Jackson was working until they gone on tour just so they could make payments on their homes. Everybody cried when Usher sang him a song. Joe Jackson was promoting this label, he know he wrong. Shame how our heroes is broke, we call them stars. That's because when they fall into earth, they fall hard. Everybody ballin' hard, but they sound whack. If you in the resistance, then this your soundtrack. Let it bump, they love it in the red. Reflection eternal, that other shit is dead, yes. Let me know if you alive. Put your hands in the air. Let me know if you alive.
But you get it. You feel it. I mean, we as like regular everyday people, we look at superstars as, like what he said, stars, and we want to be like them, but we don't want to, we want the money and the fame, but we don't think about how to continue to grow it. Because if you're looking at some of your favorite MCs like Rakim or Big Daddy Kane, they're still touring and they don't have the masses, or they don't have the money that they can just live comfortably and just chill. I mean, they could, but they can't, because they know that money is not continuing to roll in. So it's a vicious and dirty cycle. But we should really shout out and respect Jay-Z for everything that he accomplished, especially with all his money and the masses of money that came in, because this man is doing it fucking big, and clearly one person that is following in the footsteps and totally getting it, and is Rihanna. According to Forbes as well, Rihanna has reportedly become the world's wealthiest female musician. The outlet shared that her fortune adds up to $600 million, which is ahead of Madonna and Celine Dion and Beyonce. Beyonce is at $400 million. A bulk of Rihanna's wealth reportedly comes from her partnership with the French luxury goods behemoth LVMH, which is run by billionaire Bernard Arnault. Rihanna and LVMH co-owned Fenty Beauty, which launched in September 2017 and became an overnight success, setting itself apart by releasing 40 shades of foundation. Fenty Beauty grossed a reported $100 million in sales within its first few weeks. Fenty Beauty had made an estimated $570 million in revenue in 2018, with the entire company's worth approximated at $3 billion with a B. Outlet also reports that it estimates LVMH owns 50% of Fenty Beauty, while Rihanna owns 15%. She's going to get to a point where she's going to either sell those shares, or she's going to, but I believe that she believes so heavily into it that she's going to end up wanting to get more shares into it, because that is her baby. So shout out to Rihanna and them. That's insane. That's fucking dope as shit. And we should really, really love that shit. But let's get to the hardest shit. So this past week was the premiere of When They See Us, a four-part documentary series by Ava DuVernay, that beautiful queen. Oh, can she do any fucking wrong? Like, all of her stories have been immaculate and just thought out and beautiful. It's just the woman owns Hollywood right now. Like, she's killing it. But if you don't know what When They See Us is about, it's really just about the story of the Central Park jogger case that happened in 1989, in which a 28-year-old female jogger was attacked and raped brutally, left for dead in Central Park in New York City, leaving her in a coma for 12 days. Five young kids, black kids, four black kids and one Latino, by the names of Antron, Kevin, Youssef, Raymond, and Corey, were convicted of the crimes by juries in two separate trials in 1990. The convictions were subsequently vacated in 2002, but they spent 15 years in prison. Now, when I heard the story originally, like years back, it blew me away because I couldn't believe what I was reading. I couldn't believe it. It just sounded like something ridiculous. But because I was a kid then, it just seemed to me like, well, this is just, it's one-off. You really don't hear about people who did a heinous crime and then getting off because the evidence wasn't there. Or like, I've always been taught to believe that the police were good, not because of what my family would say, but because of what I've seen on TV. Bad people do bad things and they go to jail and the police are there to correct it. That was me as a kid. And then when I grew up, I realized that that's a fairy tale. That is, a lot of cops are trying to do the right thing, but because of that blue coat of silence, they stand with their brothers even when they know that they're wrong. And that is a terrible fucking place for them to be in. But it's equally as terrifying to know that there are cops out there that do shady shit like this. But the story follows these kids and their journey and everything that happened to them. And what happened that night. So when I'm watching this, I am already like excited and I'm going into it. But then when it started, my heart just sank. I didn't move my couch. I didn't move from my couch. I just sat there and I watched every single episode, every single minute of it. I didn't want to miss anything. And I found myself tearing up. But seeing the cast of people that was well known, like Joshua Jackson, Blair Underwood, Vera Farmiga, John Leguizamo. And whenever I see John Leguizamo, I'm hooked because he does great work. Felicity Huffman, if you don't know who she is, she was on Desperate Housewives, but she's also a part of that whole school scandal case that's going on, and she's definitely going to be going to jail. So it's kind of funny that, I don't know. But Niecy Nash is also in it. And I got to tell you, the two standouts in this film, you would want to go with Blair Underwood because it's Blair, you know? But Niecy Nash and this kid, I want to fuck this up, Jarrell Jerome, that kid killed it. Just absolutely killed it. He played the character of Corey in the film. And I didn't know anything outside of what I was told and what I read. So seeing this and then putting myself into it was the most horrifying and terrible thing that I've ever like witnessed. It was heartbreaking, and Niecy Nash just absolutely blew me away. You know her from Reno 911. You know her from Claws. You know, you see like the bit of range from her to be able to be hysterical and a comedian. But when you see her in this. There's like it's a different beast. She like blew me away. And there's a scene in there between Niecy and Jarrell where they are in a visiting center and they're trying to just visit and talk. And she's talking about how she's been born again and she's been going to court or going to church. And he sits there and he looks at her and he knows he wants to get out and come home. And it's the first time he's seen his mom in a long time. And he just snaps and he reaches out and wants to just hold her and he wants to come home. And you see how even though he was 16 years old, and these kids, by the way, were between the ages of 14 and 16, when you see his pain and you saw the loss of innocence when he goes into he goes into prison with adults, you see that he's still innocent and still trying to like, no, like I didn't do this, like I'm just a kid. And these grown men are beating his ass and doing terrible things to him. And his fear his absolute fear of waking up and going and trying to go get something to eat or use the bathroom, like seeing his fear, the loss of innocence in that moment, and then seeing his mom again as a man, and he's like, I want to go home. Like, you see the child in him come back, and it was painful. That moved me, that those two, their interaction together at that point broke me. I love that they dedicated an entire episode to just Corey and what he went through. I mean, Corey was just a kid who was trying to, you know, do right by his friend Yusef and just be there for him while he went to the police station to talk to the police officers, not knowing any better. He was just trying to be a good friend, and he wasn't on their radar at all. And then all of a sudden, he's now put into this. And what the cops did to these kids, the separation, the trying to tie them together, changing the timelines, and like beating and abusing these kids and taking their parents away so then they wouldn't be able to not talk to them. Like, it was just insane. Them ignoring clear-cut evidence that showed that these kids did not do it. And then shame on the jury who heard the evidence of them not, like, the DNA doesn't match them. The DNA that they found in the sock or on the body, it didn't match any of these kids, but you still found them guilty. And shame on the media for making it about these kids and saying that they did it. No, allegedly, these kids are fucked up and they did it. And it was just terrible. And then fuck Donald Trump even more for putting out that ad and saying, you know, bring back the death penalty and kill these animals, you know, like, just the wordplay in here, the everything, just from top to bottom, it was hands down the best thing that I've ever seen, and it was the most fucked up thing that I ever seen, and I was just blown away. And my first question after the film was, the ADA in this, what the fuck, Linda Fairstein, where is she now? And then finding out that she wrote books, finding out that she was doing all of these, like, terrible, terrible things. Or not terrible, but doing, like, living her life like it's golden. You know, being an ADA from 1979 all the way up to 2002. Her writing books and just, she's the most terrible human being on the planet because of what she did to these kids. And still to this day, at 72 years old, this woman still believes wholeheartedly that these kids did it, period. They did it, and they're just, that the other guy who confessed to the crime is the one who did this. It was just insane. It was the worst thing that I've ever seen in my life, and the worst display of justice ever, and it gives me no faith and hope that the system can change. But I have to have hope, you know? I have to, because if I don't, then then how am I going to believe that things are going to change when my daughter is, like, old enough to see things, you know? Like, my daughter is so innocent that when she happened to be around when someone called me a nigger, she looked at me and was like, what's that? And I was like, man, it fazed her, but because of my reaction to it, I was like, oh, it's a bad word that people shouldn't say to each other. And I didn't want to go into it because she's 5 and I want to keep her as pure and as innocent as possible. It's like, how can I explain this to her one day? How am I going to? How am I going to, like, show her that the world is not what she thinks it to be, but it can be what she hopes it to be, you know? This was an incredible, incredible, just shout out to her. That was just an incredible thing. And the thing that I loved the most was seeing white people watch this and reading what they were saying online about it. Like, I looked at all the comments, I looked at all the tweets and everything from people who saw it and just saw, like, wow, I didn't know about this. I didn't see this, or this is, like, a terrible thing. Where is this woman? And backlash that's come to the doorstep of Ms. Fairstein, it's actually pretty incredible. She, as of now, has resigned from her nonprofit organization called Safe Horizon, and it's supposed to be for, you know, just women and children of like terrible crimes and stuff. It's just insane. Aiding victims of abuse and violent crimes. And for her to be on the board, it's crazy. Since 2000, by the way. What blows my mind is that after she got on in 2000 on this board, and in 2002 is when not only they got out, but the whole thing started to come about, that what she did, what she was a part of, and nothing happened to her then. And now they're like, oh, there's backlash because of this film. But in true white woman fashion, she is saying, she sent a letter to Safe Horizon that was picked up by TMZ, and it says, the program, quote, depicts me in a fictionalized version of events in a grossly and maliciously inaccurate manner. But why is it that other people who were around at that time, police officers that were around, they were interviewed and came forward and said, yep, this is what happened. This is what happened. One of the cops who was there and said to them, hey, his mom's not in there, can't talk to him. And they went in there anyway. Like, that part of the film is true. And it's the firsthand account of the person who was actually there who tried to stop them. So it's amazing to me that she can still say, no, this is bullshit, and I did my job. And it's like, nah, I don't think you did. You really didn't. You really didn't give a fuck about these kids. You didn't give a fuck about... Here, this is the thing. She didn't give a fuck about the woman that was attacked. And you can tell. You can tell she didn't give a fuck. Because if she really did, she would have, like, done her justice by doing anything and everything she could to try to find true justice for this woman by looking at all avenues. Yeah, that there was a whole bunch of kids, and they brought in like almost 20 kids that was at the park, and none of them were suspects. But all of a sudden she says, quote, all of those black kids that we picked up are now suspects of this. And she moved every single thing she could to make sure that the stories fit, to make sure that these kids confessed to this crime instead of looking for the person who really did it. And the fucked up thing is, the person who really did it was already arrested for raping somebody. He was a serial rapist who confessed to three other ones. And if they would have asked him about the Central Park jogger, he probably would have said, yep, I did it. Yeah, I did it. Like, it's just a gross misconduct on her part. And if I was the district attorney now, or if I was the ACLU, I would be seriously looking into every single conviction that she has put forward from 1979 on, period. Because there's no way in hell that this is an isolated incident. There's no way in hell that this is just a one-off at all. She had to have done some fuck shit to all of these people. And I would look into that 100%, because it is astounding to me how fucked up and just dangerous this is. And what bothers me a lot is that some people who are looking at other incidences, what Kim Kardashian is doing, like, she's doing God's work, first off. Second, all the things that she's doing to try to help get these people off and get them out of jail. Like, we need more of that shit. We need Kim Kardashian and them to fucking look at this bitch and try to get her out. Like, we need that. We do. Oh, and it says, as of 2 o'clock earlier today, Fairstein just resigned from the Board of Trustees at Vassar College in New York. Fuck yeah, shame on her. Shame on her. This is just insane and fucking terrible. But people need to go see this. I highly suggest you go out and watch this. Well, not go out, stay in. Since it's on Netflix, go watch it, and your life will fucking change, because it is insane how grossly just terrible and fucked up this whole thing is. Like, I've never in my life have seen something so terrible done to people who was truly undeserving of it. Nope, that's a lie, because we still see it today. We see it every single day when it comes to like Philando Castile, Tamir Rice, Stephon Clark. We see it all the time. Shit needs to change. And how are we going to get to that point where things will change? we have to start looking at our officials. We have to start looking at everything that is like going on in the world and really like look at what we can do to change things. Like, I'm sick of, one thing I'm sick of is fucking going to the gas station and recognizing you. Did I eat? Cause gas is too goddamn high. You know, like it's fucking insane. And I'm actually kind of sick of it. I'm really sick of it, and just shit needs to change. Yeah, man, go watch it. Go watch it. This shit will change your fucking life. It really will. And I feel like I need to step away for that for a second, and just shit needs to change. Cause I don't know. I don't fucking know.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer. For only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and get here today. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
What's crazy to me is that song, like, made years ago, is still, like, fucking relevant today. It's just insane to me. But anyway, let's move on to something else. Tracy Morgan got into an accident 15 minutes after he got a car or got his Bugatti. That's crazy as fuck. Like, you just get this car and then you get into an accident. What kind of? I mean, it's not his fault, but still. Still, that's just fucking wild to me. But anyway, if you guys want to know what they're up to, just look them up. I mean, they're doing great shit. Doing a lot better now, especially Corey, since he spent a lot of his time in solitary confinement. I'm just glad that he's out, and they're all out, and they're all living a better life, and they're extremely happy. Yeah. In other news, Madonna lost her appeal to block the sale of the letter that Tupac wrote her while he was in prison. According to legal documents that was obtained by TMZ, because they are always on top of shit, Madonna lost her appeal, and the New York State Appeals Court ruled Madonna can't pursue claims against Darlene Lutz, her old friend and art consultant, or GottaHaveRockAndRoll.com, the online auction house to which Lutz co-signed the items for sale. Tuesday's court ruling opens the door for the sale of Madonna's intimate personal items, including the breakup note from Tupac. And reading some of it, one thing was true, or was like true, that they had serious feelings for each other. And he apologizes to her. In one part, he says, "First and foremost, I must apologize to you because, like you said, I haven't been the kind of friend I know I am capable of being." And another part, he says, "For you to be seen with a black man wouldn't in any way jeopardize your career. If anything, it would make you seem that much more open and exciting. But for me, at least, in the perception I felt due to my image, quote, I would be letting down half of the people who made me what I thought I was. I never meant to hurt you." It's just, that's a beautiful thing, but, that they had, and it's sad that, the whole thing is just sad. But anyway, last year the judge tossed out Madonna's lawsuit to stop the sales, saying, a release she signed way back in 2004 means she couldn't sue over the letter's sale. The Appellate Court upheld the judge's ruling in 5-0 decision, saying Madonna's claims are blocked by the very broad release. In his handwritten breakup letter, Tupac confesses he ended his sexual relationship with Madonna because she's white. Sad, man. Sad. Sad. You know, I was listening to some people, and someone had brought up something that I think it was Nick Cannon said about black men dating white women and why they do it, because they see them as like a trophy, see them as like a crown, a feather in their cap. And I keep thinking about that, and I thought about that in the conversation I was having, and I was like, is that true? Is that really true for people now, for black people? Like, the richer you get, you have to have a white woman, so then you appear less threatening, that you appear as that you made it, that you got it. Like, you have to have a white woman on your side, kind of like a Gucci handbag or something. Like, I don't fucking get it, but if I can't believe that that can't be the case, but it started to make sense. But I just hope that that's not the case, because that means that you don't see or value yourself or your people as crowns or as worthy or as beautiful. Like I said before, I think I said it on here, but like, when I used to say some dumb shit like that, like, I don't date black girls, especially the black girls here, because they're, like, ghetto and loud and wah, wah, wah. Like, I used to be that dumb kid who would say that shit, and then it took this older lady to teach me, to tell me about everything that was going on in, like, with the black community, with black women, and hearing her story and hearing her her passion and hearing that truth, it made me look at myself differently. It made me look at black women differently, my people and where we come from and the things that we've gone through. I really looked at all of that differently, because I couldn't imagine what life would be like if I continued down that spiral. And then I started to think, why the fuck did I think that way in the first place? And it led me to think, why the fuck did other black guys think that way about black women? Like, we can't date black women, we have to go and get a white girl or a Mexican or an Asian girl. Like, what is that? Like, I can see getting a Mexican girl and or an Asian girl and saying, like, oh, they're exotic, it's different, it's spicy, blah, blah, blah. But what about, like, that demonization, that hate, that distaste, I guess? Like, where did that come from? And I can't answer the question for other people, but I remember a specific time in my life where it started for me. And it was me having a crush on this girl who was black. And I'm not going to say her name, but if she listens to this podcast, I hope she knows that she fucked me up for a bit. yeah, I had a crush on this girl. And throughout the year, I was an idiot, but yeah. That's actually kind of important because of me and my behavior and the way that I acted. It allowed her to respond in a different way, but it also was kind of fucked up how the response came. So what ended up happening was one day I was at home and it was the end of the school year. It was the end of summer school, actually, and I decided, you know what, I'll walk her home. And I wrote her a 5-page letter, and I wanted to tell her, like, how I felt about her. So I wrote her this letter, and I'm writing, I'm talking about how I love, like, her attitude, like, how pretty she is. I love, like, I liked everything about her, and I was saying all these things, and I was being honest, I was being genuine, and it turned out that I wanted to date her. Like, I was like, yeah, I want to be your man. And how that whole letter came about, I was just like after it was done, I was just like, yeah, I'm proud of this. So after summer school, I walk her home, and we're just talking and having casual conversation. And then when I get to her door, I said, hey, here's this letter, and I wanted to give this to you. And she said, okay, cool. So she took it. She went in the house, and I go home feeling good. And I wrote my number on there. But more importantly, I wrote in big-ass letters at the bottom of the page, do not show this to anybody. I was really, like, embarrassed because I'm like, you know, I don't know how to, like, express myself. I didn't know how, really. The best way that I can get through what I was thinking and feeling was writing. Back when I went to juvenile hall, I had to go to anger management as a fucking 12-year-old. But anyway, when I went to anger management, they told me that I have a lot of repressed, like, anger and pain, that whatever I'm going through, I should write it down. So I wrote and wrote and wrote, and I felt like it was the easiest and best way for me to communicate. I liked writing. I still like writing, but back then it was like the easiest thing for me to do in order to convey my feelings, my thoughts, and like secrets, I guess. So I wrote her that letter and I gave it to her, and I waited because I knew me writing that letter was huge, and I knew that she would understand, and she would more importantly see me differently. That's what I wanted. I wanted her to see me differently. And I get to school, and first period was cool. Second period comes around and people are like snickering, looking at me weird, and I'm like, okay, whatever. Third period, and that's when people are like giggling and shit in class, and I'm just like, what the fuck's going on? So she walks over to me and she gives me the letter. She says, here you go. And then she starts giggling and walks away. And I was like, okay. I thought that she wrote me back. So when I opened it, she didn't. I just saw my words on the page and was like, what the fuck? And then some people were giggling, and then she's talking to somebody, and then she looks at me and looks at the person and gets up and comes back over to me and says, hey, can I have that back? I need to show my friend because they haven't seen it yet. And then that's when I looked at the person next to me, and they just started dying with laughter because everybody saw that fucking letter. Everybody knew what I wrote. Everybody knew, like, what I was feeling. And I was so fucking embarrassed, and I kind of, like, blacked out for a second. I didn't even know if I gave her the letter back. I don't even know. I didn't remember. And I was just really hurt and really upset and pissed off. And it was just like, man, fuck that. Like, I don't want to deal with that. And then, of course, because she hung out with other black people and other black girls, all those girls were making fun of me and treating me like shit. So it really led me to believe that, you know, this is how it's always going to be. And I didn't want that type of energy. So then at that young age, I stayed away from black girls, and it kind of just evolved from there. You know, like, it I know it seems trivial and really stupid, but back then that meant so much. It meant pain. It meant frustration. And it's just kind of crazy that that one little thing, like, shaped my whole idea of what black women, black girls were, you know. So I'm thankful for that woman that came into my life and changed all of that shit. But I will say that I don't think that way now. I really don't. After that woman talked to me, I don't think that way. So I wonder if, coming back full circle, I wonder if that's how some people, or black men, like how that happened. Or maybe it was because, like, they're forbidden fruit because of the history of a black man, like, hollering at a white girl, Emmett Till, you know? Like, all that shit, it makes you think. And I hope that there isn't men out there who still feel that way and who think that way. Because if you do, shit needs to change. That needs to change, like, today. Moving on to something else. I read this story about Janelle Evans, the girl from Teen Mom who got her kids taken away because of the situation that was unfolding between her and her husband. I do respect a woman who's like, I'm a ride or die, I'm down for you because you're my man, and blah, blah, blah. I totally respect it, but when it comes to the detriment of, you know, being in fear of your life or your children's lives, it becomes into question, is like, is your devotion because of fear, or is it because of, like, genuine love for this person? Because love is tricky as fuck, because you can think that you're in love with somebody, but you're terrified of that person. It's almost Stockholm syndrome. Like, you know that this isn't good for you, but to survive, you morph into having these thoughts and these beliefs that this person loves you, or that you love this person, but you are in fear of your life, and your fight or flight kicks in. And I don't know, but what bothers me is that her and her mom were outside of a court and had an exchange outside, and the mom, Barbara, insinuates the only reason Janelle was hugging her daughter is for the cameras, which is really fucking sad, really sad. They're told that, TMZ was told, we're simply there to give the judge updates on their progress with parenting classes and couples counseling. I don't believe that it's going to be couples counseling that's going to help. I think it's a divorce attorney that's going to help. They need to separate because he is an unstable human being, and it's just a sad situation now that kids are involved and the kids are being taken away. It's just too much. It's way too fucking much. I don't know. The times are changing now. Times have changed, like, from when I was a kid. But I was also a kid and didn't see shit that that made sense to me, you know? I saw things and just took it as, I'm just a kid and whatever. But we should have been looking at things differently. Or at least taught those things. At least taught. And I'm hoping that when my daughter gets old enough to understand, that I'll be able to teach her more about, you know, life and things that are going on. Like, I know I said it earlier, but I stand by it. I mean it. Because I don't want her growing up thinking that the world is always so terrible and so bad. Like, things can and will get better. We just need to have hope and to fight for those changes. Especially the changes that we really want to see. That's my two cents on that. I don't know if, well, probably everyone is watching the finals right now, and watching this, like, Toronto and the Warriors, but it's more like Drake and the Raptors against, you know, the Warriors, because Drake is, like, losing his goddamn mind on the court, and to be honest, I fucking love it. I love the fandom. I really do. I do, because I'm a Knicks fan. I'm a Mavericks fan. I love how Mark Cuban, even he's the owner of the team. I love that he is so active with his team, and he takes that shit personal. I love Spike Lee. You know, people going at Drake hella hard, and I'm like, yo, did you forget, like, in the conference finals and shit, when Spike Lee and Reggie Miller went at it? Like, come on, son. Like, them niggas hated each other. I'm pretty sure, like, to this day, they still don't like each other. Like, I mean, I think that's just, it just comes with the territory. And I think the NBA is taking it just a little too serious. I think it's just like, hey, as long as he's not, like, trying to grab the ball and, like, fucking, you know, shoot around with the team, like, who gives a fuck if he's, like, being super opinionated and all over the place? Like, it's just Drake. Calm down. And I love that Shaq is, like, just with it. Like, I love it. I mean, it's fucking hilarious, to be honest. And he's having fun. He said in an interview, Drake is a smart guy. He knows what he's doing. It's called marketing. And it's true. Drake is just having fun and having a good time. A guy who's sitting on the couch is acting the same way. But when we get to a game, we get lively. Like, we will ride for our teams. Like, let the Knicks come to Sacramento. Like, I'll lose my goddamn mind. Like, I'm going crazy. I mean, now that we're definitely not getting Zion, like, it's still just a... But, like, come on, son. Come on, son. Like, I think everybody should just fucking chill. I think everybody should just chill. But yeah, that's pretty much all that I was gonna get into. Just because there's a lot of shit that's been going on in the news and the world and shit, but yeah, none of it is really like that big that I really care about talking about. Except Nike is suing, or Kawhi Leonard is suing Nike, and I thought this one was hella interesting. Over his claw logo that he drew himself. The thing that is crazy about it is that Nike wanted to do some exclusive shit with him, and they wanted to use his logo. And he said, yeah, and he signed that contract. But because they filed for the copyright of the logo without Kawhi's knowledge, he feels like, yo, that's fraud because that's mine and blah, blah, blah. That gave you permission to use it, and it was mutually beneficial for the both of us. But me, I'm kind of looking at it a little like, yo, did you actually like read and go through what like that contract was in 2011 when you first signed it? Because if you didn't, maybe you gave up the rights to it and they can do whatever they want with it, you know? Or maybe because the contract was up in 2018 and he signed one with New Balance, he never copyrighted his own shit, so they did it. And because they used it for a long time, maybe, just maybe, there's like a loophole in there where, and they know about it. Because I don't see Nike just doing some fuck shit just because. And also, like, I think it's just one of those things where you really need to know what the fuck you're signing before you sign shit, you know? Like, pay attention. Just pay attention. So anyway, yeah, that's pretty much all I got and all I really wanted to talk about. Because this week has been fucking crazy and I gotta get into some other shit and watch a whole bunch of wrestling and shit. But I honestly don't know what I wanted to play as like a ending, for my outro. I was really trying to look for like something new, something old, something. But then I completely forgot that YG dropped his album. So I started listening to that shit, and I'm not a big YG fan, but my homegirl Sarah, shout out to Sarah, she would get on me hella heavy and be like, yo, you should listen to YG shit, it's dope. And I never was really that big of a fan. I mean, he had some heat, but I was just not that big of a fan. But then I heard this album, and I was like, okay, he got me. He fucking got me. So I'm going to play this one off of the album. To me, it's a standout. It actually, I was cleaning up the apartment, and I fucking listened to this shit. And I found myself, like, just dancing. And I was like, man, I haven't had, like, an album that made me want to move. I haven't had a song that really made me want to move lately, like, just get down and just freestyle, and this one did it, so I know plenty of y'all heard this shit already, but this is In the Dark.
What's that on that beat? Oh. I'm in the dark going crazy. I'm in the dark doing 20 past 8. I'm in the dark, it's a movie Scorsese. I'm in the dark, that's how life been lately. In the dark, in the dark, in the dark, in the dark. In the dark, in the dark, in the dark. In the dark, in the dark, in the dark. In the dark. I'm in the dark going crazy. In the dark.
trying to make a baby. I'm in the dark like fuck you pay me. I need my honey's dark blue like the Yankees. Loaded, losing my focus. Need a bitch in a Benz, not a Ford Focus. I'm in the dark, I don't trust you, I'm toting. YG on bullshit, you already know it. My life dark. The Lamborghini red, but it's dark. I drive mines in the dark, you leave it parked. Trust issues, I done had it since the start. I'm in the field with piranhas and the sharks. I get a lot of love, but it's dark. The freaks come out at night. The freaks come out at night when it's dark. I'm in the dark going crazy. I'm in the dark doing 20 past 8. I'm in the dark, it's a movie Scorsese. I'm in the dark, that's how life been lately. In the dark, in the dark, in the dark, in the dark. In the dark, in the dark, in the dark. In the dark, in the dark, in the dark. In the dark. I like my bitches dark. I hit them at the park when it's dark. I hit my target like a dart. Why'd you go dumb, but he's smart. In real life, you a mark. Disrespect me, I'm on your head, I'm a scarf. Told my barber, cut my hair, leave a part. But don't line me up in the dark. My life dark, but I see the truth. Pop up on your bitch like peekaboo. I'm in the coupe, I don't need the roof. Her ass really shot me like Pikachu. I do a bitch harsh. Break a heart to 1,000 parts. They like how this ghetto nigga on the charts. Face down, ass up, back gotta be arched. I'm in the dark going crazy. I'm in the dark doing 20 past 8. I'm in the dark, it's a movie Scorsese. I'm in the dark, that's how life been lately. In the dark, in the dark, in the dark, in the dark. In the dark, in the dark, in the dark. In the dark, in the dark, in the dark. In the dark, 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 in the dark. I'm in the dark going crazy. I'm in the dark doing 20 past 8. I'm in the dark, it's a movie Scorsese. I'm in the dark, that's how life been lately. In the dark, in the dark, in the dark, in the dark. In the dark, in the dark, in the dark. In the dark, in the dark, in the dark. In the dark.
That was YG's In the Dark. So, I was just going to bounce. But I got one more track, but I want to take it back a bit. I want to go back to 2004 on this one, just because, I was just vibing one day, just listening to, like, I found my old iPod, and I was just like, what the fuck was I listening to back then when I had this shit? So I plugged the shit up, and I put it on shuffle, and this was the first song that popped up, and I was like, oh, man, I wonder what the fuck happened to Teedra Moses, man. I fucking love the shit out of her. She had some hits. So, I want to play off of the Complex Simplicity album. This is No, not that. This is No More Tears.
Guess I'm just caught between my heart and mind. Wanting it to be good, knowing it's not. Crying all the time, praying that a change gonna come.
Yeah, that's just like the other day he came at me.
Hit me on my hip like just touched down. Wanna see you. I know you're mad at me, but baby, I'm so sorry, sorry.
And you know, I just get tired of hearing the same old line.
I just wanna be.
Ooh, happy, ooh, sipping, bumping, passing.
that was Teedra Moses with No More Tears. I fucking love that joint. I really do. I was hoping that you guys would be feeling that. Man, I really want to... She does have some recent shit out, and I'm probably going to go check those out because why not? She has an incredible voice and absolutely just one of my favorites. But, so I was also... I was talking to my brother, and every time I talk to him, this song pops into my head, and I just want to play this and close out the show to it. Thank you again for tuning in and checking out the podcast, and I really hope you guys check out When They See Us, because that was an incredible docuseries. But this is dedicated to my brother, DZ. What up, boy? This is, well, you'll know what it is. Alright, and that was Groove Theory with Tell Me. Alright, so don't forget, this Saturday I'm going to be continuing on with my list of top 100 hip-hop albums, going from 30 to 21. We're almost to the finish line, y'all. And then when I get to the top 10, I'm going to also introduce the 10 albums that were so close to making the list, but didn't. So, thanks again for tuning in, you guys. Truly appreciate it. You guys are amazing. And I am out this bitch. Peace.